Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Maybe I'm crazy, but William Stephen Belichick is the GOAT of sneakiness.
Maybe I'm crazy.
Welcome to the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast. I'm Joy Taylor. Thanks for joining us again this week. Hope you're doing well, staying safe, staying healthy. Emmanuel Acho from Speak For Yourself is going to join us this week. He is the new co-host of Speak For Yourself. He also has a series, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. We'll ask him about that, as well as his thoughts on Cam Newton and some other NFL news as well. Of course, the whole gang is here. Crazy Gang, Heller, Donnie, and T with the Culture Report BET Awards last night. So we'll have lots to talk about there. But let's get started with Emmanuel Acho. All right, so we've been on a Speak For Yourself run the past couple weeks on the podcast. We have Big Bro Marcellus Wiley on. We have LeVar Arrington, and now we have the new co-host of Speak For Yourself, Emmanuel Acho.
Yeah.
New to the FS1 family. Thanks so much for joining us in the podcast.
Of course. I'm the new kid on the block. And I guess that comes with its perks, but I haven't been hazed so far, so it's all good.
How has your – well, you actually aren't even through a full week yet of Speak, I guess. But how has your first week at Speak gone?
You know, it's been amazing. It's being at Fox has been amazing. Like, people don't realize it's the little things. Like, you walking on campus, or not even campus, I guess the Fox lot. Y'all are fancy here. Where I've come from, it was campus. Walking on the Fox lot, it's dope. Like, you walk in and your wardrobe's already there for you. Food, to a degree, is already there waiting for you. Your producers, one call away, they'll come meet you dressing room or at the stairs and just chop it up and talk about the show. It's been cool because it allows me to solely focus on performing and being an entertainer. I don't have to worry about all the other stuff. And then the people are fantastic. I love being able to go from one show to another. It's like a team. It's as close to being on the football field when it comes to being with a team that I've experienced.
Yeah, I don't know how it was for you. I mean, you're like pretty big time, but for me, when I first came to Fox to audition, I didn't realize it was on the Fox movie lot, and I hadn't spent a lot of time in LA. So I got like to the hotel and was like getting ready to come for the audition. Like, we're pulling onto the lot, and I was like, this is the Fox studio lot. Like, this is crazy. But it does make me appreciate work so much, because it is like, it's kind of, you know, overwhelming to drive onto the lot every day.
I mean, think about this. You mentioned audition. June 10th, 2016, I just left the NFL. I was trying to get into TV. I didn't know what the heck I was going to do. And my agent at the time was like, hey, you can audition for a show that's about to launch called Speak For Yourself. So I'm thinking to myself, oh, heck yeah. You know what I'm saying? Everything I do, it usually works out. I'll go audition. Surely I'll get the job. June 10th, 2016. I walk onto the lot. I auditioned with the co-host at the time, and I thought it went great. I'm expecting Fox to give me a call. Yes, we'd love to have you. Crickets. And so I didn't get the job June 10th, 2016, because amongst other things, I just wasn't ready. Well, now June 10th, 2020, I get the call from the Fox executives. Hey, Emmanuel, we'd love to have you as our next co-host of Speak For Yourself. So whenever somebody mentions the word audition, it literally is one of the most mind-blowing experiences for me, because 4 years to the day of June 10th, from 2016 to 2020, I go from not being good enough to now getting my dream job in LA, hosting the show. Just, it's been a wild journey.
That's crazy. That's an amazing story, and a testament to like waiting for the right moment, you know, putting in your dues and the process of it. It's also my younger sister's birthday, June 10th.
Ah, great things happen on June 10th.
That's a great date. So yesterday we got some pretty crazy news. I think I yelped a little bit. Like, I like looked at my phone and saw that it was like, ah, Cam Newton.
Is that what a yelp sounds like?
I mean, like, I don't know. Like, imagine like a yelp is like if you like accidentally step on like a dog's paw or something, and they're like, ah.
See, I didn't think a yelp was audible. I thought a yelp was kind of like, I didn't know, like it was like a high pitch, high tone. I mean, but you're the Yelp expert, so.
I mean, I imagine a Yelp has somewhat of a sound. I screeched a little bit when I saw that Cam Newton was going to the Patriots because you don't know this, but I am a big Cam Newton fan and supporter. And I have a lot of theories about why people don't like Cam Newton, but I knew he would be a starter again in this league. I didn't really think it would happen this soon, and I certainly didn't think that it was going to be the Patriots. But what was your reaction when you saw that news, other than yelping, of course?
Yo, Cam is my favorite player. He has been since like 2015. I don't know when you're in the NFL if you're allowed to have favorite players, but Cam Newton and Cam Chancellor were my favorite players, Cam and Cam. Cam Chancellor has since retired, so it's now up to Cam Newton to hold the throne by himself. I was hype for several reasons. Number one, great fit. Great fit because the Patriots are missing one piece. Their defense, stout. Offensive line, because of injuries, yes, it has some issues. But running backs, I like. At receiver, yes, do they need some help? Sure. But I do think they'll be healthier this year at receiver, so that will help. I love Cam Newton to New England. Because everybody thinks, well, will it work? Cam Newton, he's eccentric, he's loud, he's stylish and flashy. That's not the Belichick way. Bump all that. The Belichick way is winning games. The Belichick way is dominating the AFC East. That is the Belichick way. And so I think it will work. I'm excited to see it to work. And I think the Patriots once again took claim of the AFC East, and I think they put themselves in the top three of the AFC.
So my theory about why people don't like Cam Newton is because Cam Newton, well, look, like if your criticisms of Cam Newton are, you know, he's injury prone, like, okay, I can rock with you there. Like, he's had a pretty bad string of injuries lately. That he's not a good player, like, I can't get down with that. Like, when he's healthy, he's a great player. So, like, you're just paying attention. It's recency bias with that. I think swag makes people uncomfortable, particularly people who are swagless. And Cam Newton is on the high end of the spectrum of swag. You wore a scarf on the show today. Yeah, and I mean, it probably made people who didn't know what was going on uncomfortable. But I do think that, like, I think that his style, his, you know, the way he plays, his Superman, like, all that can kind of make people uncomfortable, especially at the quarterback position. Now, I do think since he's been at the height of his playing ability, because he's been injured the past couple of years, a lot has changed. You got Mahomes, you got Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson is at the top of his game, like, there's a lot more swag around the league these days. What do you think about that? Because I feel like that's a big part of it.
I think you're 100% right. And I think you were tiptoeing around the adjectives that you want to use. But I'm going to tiptoe with you since that's what we're doing. And going into work today, I Googled Gardner Minshew outfits because everybody loves and adores Gardner Minshew for wearing his adorable outfits and his handlebar mustache. I love Gardner Minshew's game since he was at Wazoo, Washington State. I covered him in college as the college football analyst. Gardner Minshew is tacky. He's tacky as heck. He is as tacky as they come. But, Joy, if you Google Gardner Minshew outfits, the first thing that comes up, in quotes, Gardner Minshew rocks old man swag. So when Gardner Minshew does it, tacky as ever, shirt buttoned to here, chest hairs all out, look like he's a 1970 jazz swinger artist. When he does it, it's cute and adorable. But when Cam comes out here in his $5,000 suits and his $3,000 scarves, it's a problem. It's a distraction. I personally just don't understand it. My first day on Speak for Yourself, I had to wear, we had to do photo shoots, headshots. I take my cute little headshot, I'm feeling myself in my suit. And what people know about me, I like my suits painted on, like straight up and down. I like them like as tight as can be. I show my little ankle cleavage, etc. I post my picture on my Instagram, and this woman comments, your pants are too tight, they make you look like a midget because of how short they are. I look at her, it's like Orange County stylist with like 500 followers. I'm like, huh. Because what is appealing to you is not appealing to me, you think that that is not stylish. But you do not get to define what is stylish because it does not make you comfortable. In the same manner, I think that's how it is for Cam. The majority of those who write about Cam, the majority of those who speak about Cam, don't understand Cam. And so all of a sudden, it's not stylish, or he is a nuisance, or he is too outspoken and too flamboyant, when the same Gardner Minshew who does the exact same thing is swaggy. Make it make sense.
You know, that's all I ask for every day in any conversation is to make it make sense. I say that a lot because I don't have a lot of time for stuff that doesn't make sense. And yes, we are tiptoeing around what we're really trying to say. And, you know, what's understood doesn't need to be said. So those who understand what we're saying, get it. If you don't, just, you know, maybe you'll catch up one day. But that is just, it's a perfect example of it. You're absolutely right. Which is why I think that New England overall cultural fit is kind of a little bit strange, but it's a temporary situation. I think it's going to be really fun to watch. The AFC East part is what upsets me because I grew up in Pittsburgh, so I have some loyalty to the Steelers, even though they're on my nerves lately. And I love the Dolphins, obviously. My brother played for the Dolphins for 13 years. I lived in Miami for 10 years. I love the Dolphins. And, you know, I really felt like this year, in the AFC East, it was the Bills' year. Like, to me, the pressure is on the Bills this season still, but it's not the same circumstances anymore. But it was the Bills' year, and I was really looking forward to like a New England pressure-free season for the Dolphins, and it seems that dream is gone. So, and I like Cam Newton, so I have to find some way to balance like three AFC teams.
You're torn.
It's a nightmare. I don't know what I'm going to do. So the other news that came out with the Patriots yesterday, which got completely glossed over, which was very strategic. I see what you're doing, Bill. They got the punishment for cheating again. I don't really get crazy about the cheating thing. I can't fake outrage about anything. I'm a like hard on my sleeve, emotions on my sleeve person. I can't fake it. I'm just not a fake person. I just don't care. Like I know I'm supposed to care, but I just don't care. And it's mainly because this is what the Patriots do. So it's just going to be a part of their legacy to me that they're cheaters.
I feel you. I think the problem is it's a part of their legacy, right? To us who are in it right now in 2020 and who have seen it and, you know, Deflategate and Spygate and all the gates. So they got more gates than the houses in Beverly Hills. Like, I swear. But I think when you go back in like 2040 and 2050, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, there aren't any asterisks by the Patriots wins. And I think that's the problem. Because if you're competing against the Patriots right now, it's like, yeah, they cheated, but they still got these trophies. And in history, they're still going to go down as the winners. That's why I personally have beef with dudes who like cheat, use whatever, and come back within the same season. Like Julian Edelman, if I'm not mistaken, I think like he got suspended for the first four games of the season, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and then either comes back and maybe he's Super Bowl MVP or something. Like, I don't think I'm making this up, but something along those lines. Or at least the Patriots had won the Super Bowl, went to the Super Bowl like they always do. And I'm just like, that's not fair to me. To me as an athlete, and I know I only played 4 years because I had other higher ambitions personally, but to me it's just not fair because you got players, organizations that will reap the rewards. But history, it's not like it's going to revoke anything they've won. Now, would the Patriots have still accomplished what they've accomplished over the last two decades? Sure, right? Like, I'm not going to sit here and act like the Patriots only won all their chips because they cheated. Tom Brady's only the – hell no. Like, they still would have been great. But to me, as a former athlete, I am a little like, dang, they did get a leg up.
So I hear you, and you're – and. I don't know if I agree with the history part. Like, in a lot of ways, history sometimes doesn't look back on you so kindly. Like, things that we kind of maybe normalized to us, then 20 years from now, it might be way more serious, the cheating. And they're like, we'll look back on that legacy that the Patriots have and be like, yeah, like, they did kind of do a lot of cheating. To me, I guess the reason why I don't get so angry about it is because I consider myself a realist. And which can sometimes be confused for a pessimist, but I just think everybody cheats and like, they cheat more, which is why they get caught more. Like, it's like, you know, it's a numbers game.
So I disagree, but now here's what I adhere to a degree. The quote, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, right? Like, that's a quote that runs rampant throughout sports. But I just don't know if I can get down with that, because now let's take it from the large scale organizational structure and let's bring it on down to the player structure. There are guys within the NFL that take player enhancing drugs, right? Performance enhancing drugs. Excuse me. There are guys, but there are guys that don't. So like, Sure. Do several players take performance-enhancing drugs? Absolutely. But then there are also players who were out there just trying to get it. Like, I can say, again, I only played 4 years, so who the heck am I to talk? But I can say, I didn't never take nothing, like straight up and down. And then I look at players who I'm close with. I'm reminded, I want to say 2009, Defensive Player of the Year in the NFL, went to a linebacker, Brian Cushing, played for the Houston Texans. Cushing is a dog, absolute beast. The runner-up was my guy, played at the University of Texas, Brian Arakpo. It turns out Cushing was juicing. Meanwhile, Rack, who wasn't, doesn't get the award that Cushing got while Cushing was juicing. So I just personally, I can't get down with that because I'm like, great, you got an award, a national award that will go down in history for you. Another guy should have got it. You were cheating like hell, but he never gets to reap the benefits of it. Because even if they were to redact the award and take it back from you, it's not like it's about to go to him. So personally, Joy, just like as a high-level competitor, and not even just sports, but like as a high-level competitor of anything, I just can't get down with the playing field if it's not level.
For me, it's more about what's the butterfly effect of it, right? Like, I'm not talking about legalizing steroids or anything, although I kind of feel like they should do that for baseball. But the problem is it trickles down, right? Like, if you do it in the pros, you're eventually going to have kids in college doing it because they're trying to make pro, and the standards have been raised so high, unrealistically high, because guys are using PEDs. And then eventually it's going to get down to high school, and you're like, you just can't have that. So I agree, but I just also feel like there's an entertainment. Like, it's at the end of the day, while it is high level competition, sports is also in the same breath entertainment. And
fair.
So there's like just a lot of gray area that you can get into there. So that being said, a lot is on the line of sports coming back. We're in the middle of a pandemic. You played. If you were playing right now, how comfortable, Florida's going crazy. California cases are now rising. Would you feel comfortable coming back to play?
I would, but players are kind of, how do we say this? Como se dice, irresponsible. Let's be real. If you were a young athlete in your prime, you already risking so much by playing a game like football. I'm going to specifically talk about football, right? Like, you're risking physical health as far as bones, ligaments, soft tissue injuries. You're risking cognitive health. I studied with a neuroscientist for 3 seasons. I literally had to stop studying with this neurologist because I was getting too worried. So you're already risking injuries and pains and aches that are tremendously scary. So as a player, remember, Joy, you kind of think you're invincible as it is anyway. So personally, I probably wouldn't care. It's not saying it's the wisest thing in the world. I'm not saying that's the most calculated decision in the world. But every time you step on the football field, you're running a risk. You're running a risk every time you go to make a tackle that hey, if you tackle this guy with your head down, you might not get up. And so every time you play the game, you're running a risk. I don't think I would care about COVID, particularly because let's be real, the hardest thing to digest about COVID, you can't see it. I think that's the hardest thing. Like, it's kind of like concussions. And think about that for a second, Joy. We just now in 2016 got to a point of caring about concussions because unlike a broken arm, a torn hamstrings, broken arms, you can see them recover. You can see them heal. Concussions, you can never see the progress of. So we're just kind of like, not a big deal. I think that's kind of how we're treating COVID. Like, you can't see it. So we're still kind of like, does it really exist unless you're personally affected by it?
Yeah, and that's why I'm so concerned about the NBA coming back, because at least, again, none of us know shit, right? Like, we're not doctors, and the doctors change their minds about everything that's going on because they get new information all the time. Nobody knows anything. But I do know NBA players play in a cloth, okay? And you guys, football players, have helmets on and gloves and all kinds of equipment. And whether that matters or not, it just seems a little bit safer than just being face to face with another man that has a tiny piece of clothing on. So what's going on in the bubble to me is majorly concerning. I have a lot of apprehension about whether that's going to work or not.
I'm not as concerned about the actual players in game as I am about the players outside the game. Like, in game for me, it's simple. I would just test all 12 to 15 dudes that are on the bench that might get onto the court, test said coaches, test the refs, keep it in an isolated, incubated arena, and say go play. My issue is, last I checked, custodial, chef, cafeteria, last I heard, they can leave the bubble and come back. So I'm not as concerned about, like, the 35, 40 players that are important personnel that are going to be there. And I'm really not concerned about in-game. I'm more concerned about, like, those who can leave and those that come back. That's the only thing that's worrisome to me. Like, in-game, very much so easier to control. Outside of that and all the extras, that's where you got them issues.
Yeah, it's concerning to me. So thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it. Before we let you go, though, you are, as I mentioned earlier, big time. And you started something that's had a really big impact on a lot of people, really powerful impact on a lot of people. And it's Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. So I know you've answered this question a lot of times, but for those who don't know, where did it come from? I mean, obviously, we know, you know, everything that's happening sparked the inspiration from it, but what made you want to do it?
Yeah, so Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. It is a show I started 4 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago today, actually. And it's now over 45 million collective views on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. It's been a whirlwind. It sparked, obviously, because of the tragic murder of George Floyd, and my heart was broken. Like, as a Black man in America, I was like, this is unacceptable. I don't know how to feel. I don't know what to feel, but I'm solution oriented, Joy. And so I said, I can't just sit here and weep, and I just can't sit here in sorrow. I grew up in an all white high school. We wore uniform, all boys school. Like, don't know how I survived it, but I did. And so I'm fully familiar with white culture. But then I played at the University of Texas and I played in the league. And so I'm fully familiar in Black culture, on top of being a 6'2", 240-pound Black man. And so I said, man, how can I bridge this gap, this division between white people and Black people? And so much of it starts with communication. But the problem is, white and Black people, we truly speak two different languages because we speak two different cultures. And if you ever took a foreign language in middle school, high school, elementary school, you know one thing. In order to be fluent in that foreign language, you gotta go study abroad. Well, by living in Dallas, Texas, an uppity, you know, white area, and going to this affluent white school, I studied abroad. I studied amongst my white people, my white friends. And then by playing in the NFL and playing college at Texas, college ball, I studied abroad. And so what I can now do, and by the grace of God have been able to do, is take the pain and the hurt of my Black brothers and sisters, engulf it in grace, and deliver a message to my white brothers and sisters that they can understand. I say it like this. I take the seasoning off the food so my white friends can digest it. And it has been... it's been crazy. Like, Jennifer Aniston reached out to me. Reese Witherspoon reached out to me. Ben Stiller reached out to me. Like, so many people who I never thought I would have not only been in contact with, but, like, had conversations with. Dwayne Wade posted the video. Like, Jada Pinkett Smith. Like, people who I never thought I would share spaces with, I'm now sharing sentences with. And so it's been encouraging. It's been a blessing. And I'm just glad to be used.
Well, it is really powerful. I've seen all of them, and you have episode 4.
Because you like Matthew McConaughey, right? You're a big McConaughey fan?
I am a big McConaughey fan, but I also was interested in what you were talking about, and I have watched all of them, and you have, and I'm a McConaughey fan because I love True Detective season 1. Everybody knows that. Anyway, you have episode 4 coming out Tuesday night, yeah. 8 p.m. Can you give us a little preview of what's going to go on in episode 4?
Yeah. So episode 4, I wanted to address 3 primary questions. So many people have been emailing me. So many people have been asking. And I hear what people are saying. I read literally every email comes across my desk. And the concepts of the broken Black family. Right. Well, what about all these Black people that grow up in single parent homes? Isn't the absence of the Black father actually the biggest contributor to the lack of Black success? Or there's, you know, the question of reverse racism. Well, Emmanuel, Black people have Black History Month. White people don't have White History Month. Isn't that reverse racism? Or kind of an all time favorite, I feel like, an all time ambiguous question. I got an email. I, as a white girl, I want to wear my hair braided. but I'm offending Black people. Like, when do I know if that's cultural appropriation or not? And so I said, wow, like, these are the questions from the people. That, amongst other things, is what I answer in the conversation I have in episode 4. And it actually, to me, it's the best episode yet.
Looking forward to that. I might actually have a few suggestions, just not questions, obviously, but just, you know, like, maybe one time you can get into why it's not okay to touch my hair. You know, I'm just throwing it out
there. I could bring you on the show to discuss it.
We could do uncomfortable conversations with a Black woman. Yeah, I'll happily explain why I don't want you touching me if I didn't ask you to touch me. Well, looking forward to uncomfortable conversations with a Black man tomorrow. Congrats on all your success with that. It's very needed. It's very important. And I'll see you tomorrow on the lot. congrats on Speak for Yourself. We look forward to seeing you and Marcellus together every day. Do a great job. So thank you for coming on and welcome to the FS1 family.
Thank you. I'm going to see you. With it.
With it. With it. What? With it. We about to turn up in this bitch.
Hella Heller.
What's up, Joy?
It's been a while.
Yeah. Missed you. How's everything?
Everything is great. What is going on in With It or Quit It this week?
Okay. So obviously Cam Newton signed with the Patriots. I'd imagine you covered that with my guy, Emmanuel Acho. But that wasn't the only Patriots news that dropped. Billy's boys were fined $1 million+ and lost a third round pick for filming the lowly Bengals coaching staff last season. You remember Glazer had the scoopage with my guy, Mr. I can delete this for you right now, caught on tape.
But I can delete this right here for you.
The damage is done, my friend.
Between Deflategate, Spygate 1, Spygate 2, and low-key the Tuck Rule game, Joy, the Patriots will always be remembered as cheaters, wit it or quit it.
Yeah, I think it's with it. At this point, it's with it. I also talked to Emmanuel about this, but like, you know my thoughts on cheating for the most part, which is like, you know, everybody cheats. Like, it's not that I think that it's right. It's not that I think that it's fair. It's not that I think that you should cheat. I just personally don't like to fake outrage, and it doesn't make me outraged that the Patriots were cheating because I just assume that they always cheat. And at this point, that's just not news to anyone, I think. And overall, like, the Patriots would still be great even if they didn't cheat, but they do cheat. And I think a lot of teams cheat. I think the Patriots just cheat so much more. So much more.
A lot more.
Yeah. And then it's like, to be honest with you, it's kind of a numbers game, right? Like, I don't, you know, it's like the Tinder, like, you know, whatever the one is that you like swipe right. Like, you just swipe right on all of them. So it like helps your odds. Like, don't be selective. So you just cheat all the time. And then like, it helps your odds be better. But then also like, you're going to get caught and then you just pay the consequences, which for the Patriots are really minimal. Like, a third round pick is pretty serious, but like $1 million, like, whatever. And
they always stockpile picks too, so it's not like they're only gonna have one third, you know. So it's just
what I'm saying. So legacy wise yes, they will always be cheaters. And I think Bill Belichick is just he's so far removed from caring about it that it's just like, it's such a part of what they are that he just doesn't even care anymore. And as far as Patriots fans go, like, look, we all knew they were cheating. Of course they were cheating. It's just accept it. Like, you guys are just cheaters. It's what you do. And it's part of why you're successful. You can't say that it doesn't help you. Otherwise, they wouldn't keep doing it. So obviously it helps you.
That's not how it works, really.
Right. You know? So like, it's fine. Like, you guys are still the greatest. You just are not very honest about it. And like, it is what it is. And you're also like way better at cheating than every other team. Because if every other team is cheating, maybe they're getting away with it, but it's not helping them as much. So you figured out a way to make the cheating worthwhile to you. But that is their legacy for sure.
Patriot way.
It is a Patriot way. I'm not saying this from a salty space because I have suffered from the Patriots for a very long time. But I've also said this many, 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 many times. I wish the Dolphins would cheat as much as the Patriots do. Okay? They don't. So instead, we suck and you guys win. And the worst about it is that a bunch of the rest of us around the world are whining that you're cheating. Like, cry me a river. We win. We always win, whatever. I can't fake the outrage about it. And I also feel like there's an element of sports, a major element, two pillars of sports are competition and entertainment. And the cheating part definitely helps the entertainment side of it. It helps them on the competition ends because it gives them an advantage. But at the end of the day, them being great is a part of the entertainment side of it, of things. So they kind of all wind together, and there's this weird gray space of what's available and what's actually cheating and what's not cheating. And like, clearly they're huge cheaters, and that's just what it is. Like, you're huge, massive cheaters. Nobody thought that they weren't cheating when this came out, but like, now the league has fined them and they're not even going to fight it. So it's like, yeah, you guys were just cheating.
Well, they've made it clear that $1 million here, $500,000 there, a draft pick here, a draft pick there, isn't as important as winning the whole thing. And I think we'd want all of our teams to believe that. And yeah, they're brazenly doing their thing. But I think the Bengals security guard who busted the cameraman said it best. You know, he was talking about that guy, but we're talking about the Patriots cheating at large. He said, "Damage is done, my friend."
I love that guy. He's all of us. He's all of us. I was so proud. Speak your truth, homie. Damage is done.
Yeah, like the photographer tried to give him his best explanation. He's like, "So you're filming the guys on the sideline? Why exactly?" Oh my God, it was beautiful.
And they're wearing Patriots shirts.
Ridiculous.
It's a Saturday Night Live skit, honestly. If you would have told me that was a Saturday Night Live skit that we accidentally thought was real, I would have believed it.
Damage is done, my friend.
No, it isn't, because we delete it.
Oh, man. It's a joke. It's a literal.
It is.
So many things now feel like SNL skits or Onion articles, but they're just...
They're real.
It's our daily lives. Speaking of situations like that, you know, the saying goes, practice the way you play. What if you can't practice, though? According to NFLPA Executive Director Demaurey Smith, the unofficial team workouts being held by Tom Brady and others around the league are, quote, not in the best interest of public safety. Ignore my air quotes. You can't see them anyway, but ignore that because it's a real quote. Personally, I could see how a player might not want to hear that, but given the pandemic, I understand why Smith said what he said, and I actually took deeper meaning from it. Joy, the players are wrong for publicizing their team workouts during the pandemic. Win it or quit it.
I would say win it to that. They're not doing anything illegal, right? So this is my policy on like what's happening right now. We went through quarantine, right? Most of us followed the rules through quarantine because nothing was open for us to not do anyway, right?
It's not hard.
Right. So you had a few people here and there having house parties or what have you. But like for the most part, everyone was quarantined and followed the rules.
Right. Correct.
Well, now places in the world, quarantine is over. I'm back at work. You're back at work. Most things are open. They're just asking that you simply wear a mask, you know,
right.
Which would be the simplest of asks. But because we are Americans and
it's wildly uncomfortable. I can't do it.
Or just like you think you're smarter than a pandemic doctor, people aren't wearing masks. So now, of course, you know, we have these incredible numbers skyrocketing and it's a disaster again, which is completely predictable. It's bad, yes. However, until something is literally illegal, I can't say that I have a problem with it. I'm with you though. I don't need it to be advertised, right? So like when the helicopters are chasing down Tom Brady, like that, he can't control that, right? Like the news, they're gonna do their jobs.
Tom, he could have called in a favor if he wanted that mess to stop.
I kind of wish that he would if he could. I mean, it's Tampa Bay is the biggest story in the world there, so I don't know that they would necessarily listen to him. But I did think it was weird though, because like it's not really like the best look. I totally get it. First of all, I understand it from the players' perspectives in that their lives are moving forward. Like, football is happening. They're going to have to report to camp in not a lot of time. Their bodies have to be in the physical shape they need to be in to go into camp, or they're going to get injured, which is going to affect years and their future and their family's future. I understand that. So this idea that they can just keep working out in their apartments with their, you know, exercise bands is ludicrous. Like, they need to get outside and do, like, actual running and actual drills, get themselves in shape, the shape they need to be in to go back to camp. Like, that I fully understand. So they're going to need to work out in groups. The reason why the NFLPA doesn't want them working out in groups is because they don't want them coming into camp in massive groups with COVID, because that sets everything back. Now, obviously, everyone's going to get tested thoroughly, probably have to do some sort of a week-long quarantine or something before they come into camp.
For sure.
But as at this point right now, I don't have a problem with them practicing. If they're breaking the law or going against what, you know, health officials and, like, the government was saying to do, then I would say, okay, this is nonsense. Like, we're all supposed to be at home, early days in quarantine. Like, this would have been unacceptable. They're not breaking the law. They're not doing anything illegal. So I'm okay with it, but I am with you. People refuse to get their news and, like, sources from actual, like, factual places these days. So like, if they're seeing, like, Tom Brady with no mask on, and he shouldn't have a mask on because he's out there working out, they're like, oh, see, Tom Brady doesn't wear a mask on, I'm doing mask now. And here we are. So, like, I would not mind them not showing the group workouts, right?
For sure.
It doesn't bother me that they're working out. I understand the value of them working out. I understand the necessity for them personally and their and other aspects of their physical health that they need to be working out together. I am with you, though. I don't need to see it.
Yeah, this is, and keep in mind for people listening, this is coming from two people who directly benefit from there being more footage of Tom Brady.
Exactly.
Like, we need that. We want that. But at the same time, you know, we can Photoshop, we can make it happen without this stuff, because what's more important is people's health. To your point about, you know, other sports happening and things going on, I just let me rattle off really quickly where other sports are at in terms of this, and how that, you know, how, you know, you feel pressure to be ready for your sport, but also you see other athletes out there performing. I've been watching Bundesliga German soccer since mid-May. English Premier League returned in mid-June. NASCAR in May. UFC's done 5 fights in Vegas. They did 3 fights in Jacksonville. Now they're going to Fight Island. Like, things are happening. The NWSL kicked off from Salt Lake City over the weekend. The MLB's due to start on July 23rd. The MLS starts in Orlando also on July 8th. And NBA's coming in July. So many things are going to happen. We're going to have so many different ways to suss out how to have sports during the pandemic by the time we get to football. So this is just a early phase conversation that's playing out. And I think, like, we, you and I both understood when
Demoris.
Damn, I was putting Demoris on there for no reason this whole time.
Yeah, it's just Demoris.
Damn, that's crazy. Demoris Smith was saying, no one should be practicing. What he really meant was, stop telling everyone, man. Stop making us look bad. Set a good example. That's all.
Yeah, and, like, colleges are practicing. We know everyone is out there practicing. And I have no problem with that. Again, my issue is with these people, and there's so many of them. And it's, I can't even say it's disappointing, because it's, I cannot pretend like I am even in the slightest
particle surprised, not even a tiny little molecule.
What's, like, half a molecule, an atom? I am not an atom surprised that people cannot wear their masks. It just, it's wild. Like, if you're just gonna be inside, like, outdoors, cool, like, stay away from people, don't have to wear a mask, you're not around other humans, right? Go for a walk,
right?
Get some fresh air,
right?
Sure. If you go inside a building, if you go inside a subway, if you go inside a bus, if you're in an Uber, you know, if you're in an airport,
anywhere with walls and a ceiling, I would say,
just put your mask on, please.
Right. Before in March, we all needed to stay inside for 2 weeks.
Here's my question, right?
Pull that off.
I was having this conversation with someone. I was having this conversation with someone, like, yesterday, or maybe it's the other day, I don't know, recently. And they were, like, trying to talk to me about, like, the mask. And I was like, I have a question. Like, how do you think that the virus is spread? Like, do you think you spread it through your elbows?
Or, well, like, that's why you do elbow bumps.
Yeah, I mean, like, do you think it gets spread through your elbows? You think it, like, gets spread through farts? Or, like forehead sweat? It gets spread through your mouth and your nose.
So respiratory.
Why would you not want a mask on, okay? Even if it's not going to 100% protect you, even if it, like, 70% protects you, why would you not want a mask on? And then, being that you could be asymptomatic and give it to someone else, you are irresponsible as f- to not wear a mask. Like, I don't understand it. Make it make sense, please.
You can't have thought. There's a simple thought equation that people must not have thought through. Are you okay with you being cavalier and giving the illness to someone in your family or someone you know and that person dying? Because when you're not wearing a mask, that's what you're saying. You're saying, I don't give a fuck. I don't care about you. I don't care about anyone else. And it's ridiculous.
That's the wrong approach, though, Heller. That's the wrong approach. You can't do it. You can't make things about other people. You've got to find a way to make it about, like, how does it affect you?
If you don't want to get it, wear a mask.
We're taking a very deep dive now, but overall, that's my point with this. Like, everyone's watching, and listen, like, I am not perfect by any means. I'm trying to do my best and, like, live all life and continue to move forward and continue working and doing, you know, all the things I enjoy doing while also trying to be responsible. So I get it. But just, like, when you can, just wear a mask. It's not that hard.
Just try harder. And you said it was Demoris?
Demoris Smith.
Demoris? Demoris Smith, thank you.
Demoris, yes. The stress of daily life weighs on us all. Whether you're an elite athlete or just a regular person trying to get through the day, muscle pain and muscle tension is a real thing. That's why I use Theragun, the handheld percussive therapy device that releases your deepest muscle tension using a scientifically calibrated combination of depth, speed, and power. And now, as quiet as an electric toothbrush. That's because the all-new Gen 4 Theragun has a proprietary brushless motor that's so quiet you will wonder if it is on, while you soothe your aching muscles with Theragun's signature power, amplitude, and effectiveness. Try Theragun risk-free for 30 days. There is no substitute for the Theragun Gen 4 with an OLED screen, personalized Theragun app, and the quiet and power that you need. Starting at only $199, go to Theragun.com/joy right now and get your Gen 4 Theragun today. That's Theragun.com/joy, Theragun.com/joy. Hey, Donnie, what's up? What's going on at High Key Low Key this week?
What is up? High key, the NBA will be back in a matter of weeks. Low key is going to be completely unpredictable.
Yeah, so the bubble. The bubble is only a few weeks away, and they're going to start reporting down there for camp and meeting up with teams within the next week or so. And I am very skeptical about everything that's going on with it. Obviously, we know that Florida gonna Florida. So, yeah. You know, there's just a lot going on down there regarding COVID. It seems like it was the best place to have the season restart. Now it seems like it's like you want to be anywhere but Florida.
Right, turning to ground zero.
Right now, it's wild. Predictable, of course, because, you know, nobody wants to wear masks. But yeah, I mean, J.R. Smith is now going to be with the Lakers. A.B. Bradley is out. Several other players are out. There's obviously a large amount of concern for COVID. I'm very skeptical about how this quarantine is actually going to play out. Are players actually going to stay in the bubble? Because there are really harsh concerns and repercussions to leaving the bubble. There's a lot that can happen with the play-in games and the seeding. Zion and the Pelicans have one of the easiest schedules. Like, they could sneak in the playoffs and change everything up. And also, I mean, I just think with everything that's going on, it just feels very – I don't feel confident about this at all. And maybe it's just because, like, the news is kind of bombarding us with all this really bad news about the spike in cases and how this, like, is actually going to work. Because they are going to have workers who leave the bubble – working around the players, like they're gonna, you know, socially distance and have to wear gloves and, you know, all this stuff, but it's just you can't see the virus.
You can only be so restrictive,
right? So I don't know. I want to be optimistic, but, you know, the NBA is just, because the way the sport is, they're just the most vulnerable sport in this in this virus, because they don't have a lot of equipment on, as in no equipment other than clothing,
cloth.
They're right up on top of each other while just only wearing cloth.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of players and a lot of staff and coaches, and some of the coaches are older. And it's just, the whole thing is really kind of scary to me. I wanted to be optimistic about it, but, and I'm hoping that, you know, everyone stays safe and no one gets injured and, you know, no one gets sick, but I have a lot of issues and concerns with it. And also, I feel like, you know, it's going to be impossible to predict what actually what the outcome is going to be, because there are so many factors that go into this crazy bubble world. I don't know that we can just sit here and safely say like, oh yeah, it's the Clippers or it's the Lakers or, you know,
who knows? It's unprecedented.
Yeah, it's unprecedented. I really think I would not be surprised if this is the year that a team that in normal circumstances maybe wouldn't have even made the playoffs or is a very low seed ends up pulling an upset and winning the championship because there's just so many unpredictable things that go on with this bubble.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, high key, we're really excited about the eyes that the WNBA will be getting when they return. Low key, women are the best at everything. I mean, you know this. Yes. I know this. This is common knowledge.
You would be surprised. But we are really awesome and get things done. Actually, the NWSL was the first major sports league to come back during COVID. No big deal.
No big.
And of course, you know, the WNBA just like seamlessly announced their return with no issues and no arguing back and forth to Orlando. They're going to be playing at the IMG Academy in Bradenton. And they're going to do a 22 regular season game followed by a traditional playoff format. Now, obviously, I realize the WNBA is much smaller than the NBA, but they are going to have all of their teams there, 12 teams. And yeah, it's was announced and just we moved right along and there was no issues. But I'm really excited for people to watch the WNBA because, you know, there was a time in the WNBA when it first started out that it was really cracking. And yeah, I think that now in this time where everyone is so desperate for sports, we're really going to watch the WNBA and, you know, these women are going to get their flowers and I'm hype about it. I'm excited about it. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it will be pretty seamless as, you know, all things that women take care of.
This comes naturally to you guys. It's unfair.
We just know how to get things done, you know? I don't know why we get labeled as, like, the drama queens. Like, you're just like, what do we need to fix? Okay, let's fix it. Done.
Yeah, like that. Easy.
We can figure it out.
All right, high key, Brett Favre is wrong about how to use Jordan Love. Low key, Aaron Rodgers is going to have a crazy good year. It's coming.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Aaron Rodgers about to go.
Oh man, it's scary.
Aaron Rodgers is so mad. Like Aaron Rodgers is an angry guy right now. Like he is just sitting there steaming, just like with the steam coming out of his ears.
Exactly.
So Brett Favre suggested that they use Jordan Love in like a Taysom Hill capacity. He said, I think there's ways to incorporate it, much like Taysom Hill with the Saints, use it as a halfback pass, but occasionally just let him run it to show that she'll do that, something like that. I don't think Jordan Love is going to see the field at all. Now, in theory, maybe what Brett Favre is saying could work, but the problem is Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur are not simpatico right now. And they moved up to get him, and they are just making all these decisions that are not supporting Aaron Rodgers right now. So if they, on top of that, start integrating Jordan Love into the offense, no.
It's the wrong direction. You don't want to be going that direction. You want to flip that, this way.
It's not going to work. I don't know that it would work because I actually think that Taysom Hill is incredibly talented at that gadget position as well. I think everyone's kind of trying to just make it seem like you could just get that. Like Taysom Hill's an incredible all-around athlete. Very versatile. Jordan Love is a good runner, but is he that much of an athlete? Is his body there yet? Because, you know, Taysom Hill is older than Jordan Love. Your rookie year to your second year, like, your body's going to change a lot, too. And that plays a big role in it because Taysom plays very fearlessly. So, yeah, I don't think this will work, but I do know one thing. I liked the Packers last year.
Man.
I'm not selling that stock yet. Aaron Rodgers is going to be a problem this year. He's going to go, off.
Yeah, man. The Lions season is already over before it even began.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Hi, T. What's going on in the Culture Report this week?
Hey, Joy. So the BET Awards celebrated 20 years on Sunday. We had to watch it virtually, of course, but the production, the performances, the commercial were on point. They did that. The best thing they could have done this year was to have the entire thing pre-recorded. I enjoyed it start to finish. Megan Thee Stallion, she performed, did such an amazing job. I love that whole Mad Max vibe and her knees. I need to borrow her knees for sure. A few of my favorite moments was Marseille Martin, a little sis. She won Young Stars Awards. Michael B. Jordan, Best Actor. Issa Rae, Best Actress, also deserving. But Teyana Taylor got Video Director of the Year, which I'm like, kudos to you, sis, because she deserved that. Lil Wayne tribute to Kobe was phenomenal, of course. Chloe and Halle performance amazing. They're so cute. I love them. Anderson .Paak, I'm so obsessed with him. He performed. I love him. Wayne Brady's tribute to Little Richard. He's so talented. Like, Wayne Brady, like, doesn't necessarily always get the credit he deserves, and he is just crazy talented. Beyonce got, of course, the 2020 Humanitarian Award, and she looked incredible, like, so beautiful. And we did get to see the official trailer of R.E.S.P.C.T. starring Jennifer Hudson, and it showed Marlon Wayans, I believe Forrest Whitaker as well. They're also going to be in the movie, so I just can't wait to see it. Joy, what did you think of the BET Awards?
I loved it. Well, you covered, like, almost every moment that I loved, but I also loved Alicia Keys' performance. The baby was amazing as well. And I thought Amanda Seales did a great job also. I thought it was great, actually. I mean, obviously, like, award show, a part of the award show is, you know, the crowd and the live performances. But I just felt like I didn't mind it. Like, it was great, entertaining. Like, I never know what to expect whenever we're trying to do things virtually, like, how it's actually going to resonate. But I thought it was great. Of course, everything being pre-recorded, so you don't have to worry about any kind of technical issues, which I'm all here for, because there's nothing worse than technical issues, which I've been dealing with all day today. So, yeah, I mean, I thought it was great. Like you said, the commercials were on point. Like, I had no idea what to expect, and I was so happy with all of it. Beyonce looks like a goddess.
Yes,
and
she did.
Meg is just incredible. There were just endless moments. I love Masego. I've been listening to Masego all day. Like,
yes,
I could bob with this. Yes. So there, you know, I just thought everything was really well done, and I loved it.
Yeah, same. So speaking of Beyonce, Black is King trailer dropped. It's a visual album by, of course, Beyonce. And the trailer was so dope to me. When she said that ancestors never left you, I believe this will show us, like, the roots of, like, where we come from. The basket in the ocean made me think of Moses, whose mother floated him down the Nile River to save him from being killed from the Egyptians. I think it's going to take us through our history and show us patterns of systemic racism in this country. But I have to say something. Black people, I feel like that we were so hard, like, on each other. I've been already seeing things like, why is the title Black is King, and why isn't it on Netflix? And just, like, we gotta start appreciating something. I'm like, we're moving in the right direction. I think we need to keep this momentum. This visual album can really can reach so many people, and definitely educate. And for many of us, like myself, like, I was taught in school what I thought was our history. I didn't find out the truth about a lot of events until much later. Thank God for books, documentaries, and conversations. So if Beyonce wanna come up with this visual album, where we could possibly, like, you know, expand our knowledge and learn something about our roots and our culture, I'm open for that, especially given the times that we're in. We need everything right now. So, Joy, what did you think about the trailer?
I thought the trailer was brilliant. And one thing about Beyonce when it comes to the visual aesthetic of anything that she touches, it's going to be excellence. Like, if you saw the On the Run tour to the visuals that they did at the actual concert were just incredible. Obviously, Lemonade was groundbreaking, and her performance at Coachella is one of the greatest, like, live performances of all time. So she doesn't do anything linear or basic. Like, her videos and what she has evolved into as an artist and as a creator are just next level. So this Black is King movie is going to be something that just moves you. I mean, Lemonade to me, like, was just, it blew my mind. Like, I'd never seen anything like this. It was like Michael Jackson Thriller level, like, in, like, all time innovative, different, unexpected, original. You know, it just puts it, like, Lemonade was like, you can't tell me nothing right now, okay? Like, and it's like, you didn't even need to listen to the music to be moved by it. Like, that's how powerful it was. So yeah, this is going to be incredible. It doesn't need to be on Netflix. I love me some Netflix, okay? But Disney does great work as well.
They do.
They do a pretty good job of basically everything that they do. Right. It's gonna be, where it is irrelevant. You're absolutely right. It's gonna reach a lot of people because Beyonce
for sure.
Is the undeniable biggest artist in the world. So it's, I can't wait for it. The trailer looked amazing and it's going to be brilliant.
It is. We got to wait a month, but I feel like it's going to be worth the wait.
Absolutely.
All right, so next, Kanye is partnering with Gap for a new Yeezy line. Kanye is about to put Gap back on the map. And this is like no shade to them, because I know people still shop at Gap. But whether you like Kanye, his clothes, shoes, or even shop at Gap, this stuff is going to sell. At the end of the day, Kanye is a businessman and he gets things done. So he's going to take this, he's taking this line directly to the people. So there's that. And apparently he worked at Gap as a teen. So I can imagine this being like a full circle moment for him. But nothing will be available until 2021. So look, we got time to save our money. I think the collaboration will be dope. What are your thoughts about this collaboration?
I love it. I love things that are accessible to everyone. To be perfectly honest, like I am a sneakerhead and I own zero pairs of Yeezys. And I just don't like them. And I don't, okay, I'm not into like the Yeezy gear. Like, and I'm a sweatpants t-shirt. Like, obviously, like I'm not, like when I'm chilling, I am not over the top at all. So I think this is great. I think that like making things that are affordable and accessible to everyone is impactful. Like there's no mm-hmm. like shame in that, or like, you know, it's not chic or, you know, exclusive. Like I like things that are accessible to everyone that people can actually take part in and feel like they're a part of what's going on. So I just don't like the way Yeezys look. That's why I've never purchased them. I'm also not like super huge on spending thousands of dollars on pairs of shoes, even though I am a sneakerhead. I'm just more selective, you know? But anyway, the point is not about me. The Gap store, the Gap collaboration is going to be dope. I like that he's doing it. And it is a cool story. Like it shows just like how hard work and dedication can bring you full circle to where you start and being on the next level. So I love it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited. I think it's, like I said, it's a dope collaboration for me.
Okay. Well, thanks T. Hope you're doing well. Staying safe. You look fabulous.
Thanks Joy. You too.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast. Thank you to Emmanuel Acha for stopping by. Make sure that you subscribe to the podcast on YouTube, Maybe I'm Crazy podcast. Follow us on all our social media pages. Follow us on all our social media pages at Maybe I'm Crazy pod. And you can listen to the podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, iHeartMedia app, Apple Podcasts. Make sure you subscribe on there as well. And we'll catch you next week.
Maybe I'm crazy, maybe I'm not. Ooh.